This is ESPN Radio.
Fourth quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we got plenty of NFL to get into in the 6 o'clock hour, but we also got to talk about the bombshell that we got in the landscape of college football with Oklahoma head coach, former Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley, dropping the news after this weekend's game against OSU that he would become the next head coach of the USC Trojans. And this is not one of those things that we expected. There were other names that were linked to the USC job, Dave Aranda down at Baylor, Matt Campbell, even James Franklin at Penn State before he signed that massive extension. I don't think anybody in college football expected Lincoln Riley would make that move to SC. But after you kind of peel back some of the layers, you can understand why for him it would actually make sense, and obviously for SC as well.
Yeah, Chris, you're absolutely right. And the SEC angle of all this is going to be the thing that hangs overhead. It's the number one thing I've heard all day since this started going on was, well, the impending move to the SEC wasn't problems that Lincoln Riley wanted. And to be clear, I don't vibe with the idea that he's running from anything, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you assess the damage and go, all right, if all things are equal and then some, and I can get a lifestyle upgrade being in Southern California versus Norman, Oklahoma, which, again, this isn't about disrespecting Norman, Oklahoma. It's just a reality because you've also got a recruiting hotbed in Southern California. And, Chris, you know this as well as I do. While college football recruiting has become a more national game, and that is evidenced by what Lincoln Riley has been able to bring to Oklahoma, a number of Southern California commitments in these upcoming classes included, some of whom are now decommitting, there is nothing quite like being able to sell guys on staying local in your own backyard when you've got a place full of that much talent.
No question. And the other aspect that we can't underestimate is the value of name, image, and likeness in the second largest media market in the country, which is L.A. So there are going to be a lot of those homegrown kids from Southern California that are going to opt to stay home because, A, you have a head coach that can develop talent specifically at the quarterback position. But, B, you have the opportunity to monetize your athletic ability at a much earlier age just because of the magnitude of the city and ultimately the prestige and the history of the program. So I just feel like it's a win for SC and Mike Bone, their athletic director. It's a huge win for Lincoln Riley in terms of being able to have a clear path to the college football playoff and being able to once again dominate the conference that he's in, because the Pac-12 is not that all dissimilar from the Big 12 in terms of being top heavy. And so I just think that overall, it's a win for him. And as you mentioned, it is Southern California. They're buying him a $6 million home on top of buying his two cribs at Oklahoma. Unlimited use of the PJ for him and his family. It just felt like this is a deal that was too good to turn down. And although we don't have the specifics of the contract, it's estimated to be in the ballpark of $110 million. So Lincoln Riley getting that eight-figure-a-year bag, I don't think that this is a loss or this is a losing scenario for him, even though the expectations for him on a year-to-year basis get ratcheted up because it is SC.
Yeah, and to be clear, those are all, you know, reported details here. We're not, you know, exactly, none of that's reported by ESPN. Those are things that, because USC is a private school, to Chris's point, we may never fully know here, but we expected it to be some galaxy brain stuff. And if you're Mike Bone and company, the athletic director, you had to show whoever was going to be the next head coach you were serious about investing in football the way 2021 requires as an investment. And the happiest people in the world, Chris, have to be the folks at the Pac-12 media offices, right? At the Pac-12 commissioner's office, because this is a program that with this kind of leadership immediately legitimizes your conference again in a way that had been a struggle lately. The Pac-12 has good football. Oregon, Utah, these other schools have played good football, but they've largely cannibalized themselves. They've been out of the college football playoff for five straight years, and we know that as far as big picture relevance, Chris, that hurts you a lot. And so a guy like Lincoln Riley being able to come in immediately with the cachet he's got in an era where we've got the one-time transfer rule available to you mere weeks before the early signing period kicks off, he's got a chance to be able to jumpstart this thing even faster than most times and places would have ever allowed for.
No question about it. And he's a star, right? He's a big name. And I think that's going to make a difference in terms of recruiting. But overall for the conference, it's going to make a huge difference when it comes to negotiating their media rights deal, which is going to come up in the next couple of years. So Like, this is a huge win for the Pac-12. It's a huge win for SC. And I think for a conference that's looking to, you know, increase its profile, like, this is a name that you love to get. Because let's face it, right now the Pac-12 is at best the third best conference in all of college football behind the SEC and the Big Ten. And so in order to give yourself an opportunity to change that, making a move to bring over Lincoln Riley from the Big 12, which is disintegrating before our eyes, seems like it's the right direction to go. I don't think Southern Cal could have done a better job in terms of finding a better name to take over their head coaching vacancy. And so now it's just a matter of Lincoln Riley being able to turn this thing around. And I don't imagine that this is going to be a long rebuild process. Like, I expect in the next 2 to 3 years for Southern Cal to be a program that's in the conversation for competing for national championships. And that's how quickly I think this can happen with the talent base and the footprint that Lincoln Riley is going to have to recruit from.
I would also say, advice to Southern Cal, even if it doesn't happen immediately, and we've heard from Keyshawn Johnson and others who have grand expectations for year one, give this thing time because you have time right now. That's going to be the difference, I think, between USC and some of the other jobs around college football, because Candy Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, one thing we heard that was interesting after Oklahoma's loss against Oklahoma State at Bedlam this weekend was this statement from Lincoln Riley.
I'm not going to be the next head coach at LSU.
Because that was the other job that we had heard him linked to so much here, Chris. That's been the job that for a large portion of the offseason people have put as the number one job in college football. And I generally tended to agree with them. You look at the last three coaches that have been there have all hoisted a national championship trophy. And I would say in the case of Nick Saban, only one of those was because they were a coach that was so light years better than all of their counterparts. And so it's got to look like fertile soil for another coach coming over. And I'm seeing right now all the rumors and the reports on Twitter from The Athletic about LSU targeting Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly from here on out. And I would say this, I understand the allure, Chris, entirely. You get to recruit at a different level down there at LSU. You've got that talent in your backyard down there at LSU. You've also got, and I think this is the most difficult thing to overcome in college football, is closer proximity to the biggest pain in your life. You got to sit there and look at Alabama and the SEC West every year. The same way that Michigan has had to sit in the Big Ten East and look at Ohio State. And what's it done? Put the coach there on the hot seat almost every year. Made life a living hell for those spots involved. Like, Chris, when I look at LSU in Florida and the way that they've churned through head coaches as of late, Florida spitting out Dan Mullen a year after he was in the SEC championship game, LSU turning over Coach O a couple years after they won a national title. It gets to be those situations where it's kind of like someone who cheats on their new spouse with their while they're with their old spouse. At some point, if that keeps happening, you got to turn around and look and go, all right, if you're doing this with that person here, what are you going to do with me when the going gets tough? That's going to be, I think, increasingly a harder environment to sell to a lot of these coaches. And we're seeing that kind of bear out with how many coaches like the James Franklins of the world and the Mel Tuckers of the world have decided, hey, you know what? I'll stay put even as my name gets floated for some of these other jobs.
Yeah, that's the problem with those programs like LSU and like Florida. Perception ends up creating a reality that they don't necessarily want. When you start churning through coaches because they can't live up to the expectations that the coach in the division or in the conference is setting for that program, then it becomes a problem, right? Like, you're trying to live up to the standard that Nick Saban has established at Alabama. That's going to be next to impossible to do with one of the greatest head coaches, if not the greatest head coach in the modern college football era. Same thing with Kirby Smart down there at Georgia. Like, it's going to be next to impossible to do in terms of living up to the standard that he's been able to establish at Georgia, and also knowing the recruiting base that Kirby Smart is pulling from with being, you know, less than an hour drive from Atlanta. So it's going to be tough in terms of your program measuring the level of success that you're having based on what you're seeing at your division rival in the preeminent conference in all of college football. And so that's why I think the expectations that LSU and that Florida set perennially become a little unrealistic, and that ends up leading to, you know, being in this perpetual cycle of hiring and firing coaches because they can never live up to that standard that Alabama has or that Georgia has. So I think that the programs do themselves a disservice when they decide that they want to measure their incumbent head coach based on that standard. And that's probably why, to your point, a lot of coaches around college football are passing up on the opportunity to be coaches at those spots. Now, with Billy Napier, the head coach from Louisiana, going to Florida, I feel like that was a situation, a job that was too good for him to pass up.
Yep.
And so he decided that he wanted to commit to that, and he's 2 years old, so hopefully age is on his side when it comes to being able to build the infrastructure to have sustained success. But yeah, with LSU, I mean, Ed O just won a national championship a couple of years ago and had the number one overall pick in Joe Burrow, and now we're talking about this being his last season a year after signing a long-term contract with LSU. So yeah, it doesn't necessarily feel like the job has the appeal in coaching circles around college football, and I think that's because of the strings that are attached to it, the expectations year to year that come along with it.
Yeah, it's a large part of the reason why I don't think Brian Kelly is going to end up leaving Notre Dame and heading down to LSU. That's just my read of the situation right now. But as we mentioned, this statement from USC Athletic Director Mike Bone sums it up pretty well. Quote, "It was never our goal to change the landscape of college football with one of the biggest moves in the history of the game. But we did exactly that." That is how they feel after hiring Lincoln Riley, and to be honest, I kind of agree with them. Coming up next, though, do we all agree that the Los Angeles Rams are playing themselves out of their hopes and dreams right before our very eyes? That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and Mike, one of the primetime games in Week 12 was the matchup between the Green Bay Packers and the LA Rams. The Rams have been on a two-game losing streak, and the Packers have been one of the more steady teams in the entire conference, you know, being one of those squads that's continuing to find ways to win. And the only disappointing loss that we can say that they had was last week against the Minnesota Vikings, where it felt like this team was kind of primed to continue to maintain their dominance in the conference and in that division. But in yesterday's game, it felt like it was closely contested, a one-possession game for the most part throughout the first half, and then the wheels came off for the LA Rams in that third quarter, and it started with that pick six by Rasul Douglas and seemed to snowball from there. So the question that I got to throw out to you is, with this three-game losing streak, are we still considering the Rams contenders to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl?
I think they're still contenders, Chris, but it's starting to feel more and more tenuous as the days go by, mostly because I don't know how healthy this team is going to be in the near future. You're looking at a cracked foundation. You're looking at an offensive line that's been exposed going back to the Tennessee game as one that was not what the stats said it was early in the season. And you're looking at a quarterback that, according to Diana Rossini, is dealing with a number of issues. Odell Beckham Jr., clearly laboring with a bad back last night, and your second best receiver in Robert Woods done for the season. So it's a slim chance here, Chris. If you're asking me to bet money on it right now, I don't think the Rams are going to be a Super Bowl contender to represent the NFC unless they get some serious health good luck down the stretch of this season.
Yeah, it's hard for me to call them a contender when they've only beaten one team with a record over 500 in four games. Like, unless you're going to be able to beat the best teams in the NFL, then I can't call you a contender. And one of the concerns that we had about this team is the overall depth, because the roster is so top heavy. And I think some of the deficiencies throughout this team are starting to show up in some unflattering ways. And you talked about what's happening up front on the offensive line. And I think one of the other areas that is starting to pop up is the lack of depth in the secondary, because it felt like the Green Bay Packers wide receivers were able to find huge holes, huge voids in the zones in that secondary. And even when the Rams went with man-to-man coverage, you would see those guys find ways to be able to create separation. So I think it's got to be concerning for the Rams. They weren't able to generate the kind of pass rush that we were expecting when you have a defensive front that features Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, and Von Miller. So yeah, there are some serious question marks as to how far this team is going to go. Now, are they going to be a playoff team? Absolutely. Like, I think that this is going to be the first wild card team. They're going to be that fifth seed in the conference. But this could be a situation where we're talking about the Rams in a year that they're supposed to be all in, being one and done when it comes to playoff games. And that's a scary spot to be in. Right now, they're hustling backwards. And I don't want to say the sky is falling, but it ain't looking good for the Rams in terms of their overall trajectory.
No, and Chris, who'd have thought at the beginning of this season the biggest thing that we could say about why the Rams might have a decent stretch down the stretch of the season is just because of the way their conference has changed complexion-wise, right? We thought it was going to be a juggernaut all the way through. And while the Niners can pose an interesting threat, I don't know if any of us are ready to trust them, especially if Deebo Samuel is really going to be injured for any amount of time here. They're all everything, wide receiver who produces like a running back this season. and then the Seahawks completely falling off a cliff. Like, they do have to face the Cardinals one more time, who quite honestly have dealt with injuries to the extent that the Rams have had, and then some, having Kyler Murray miss multiple games. So health certainly a question mark for them, but this division's a far cry from what we thought it was going to be at the beginning of the season.
No, it feels like it's a much easier road than what we expected for the Rams, but also this offense in the second half of this season isn't what we saw in the first half. It's not nearly as explosive. They're more predictable. In the three-game skid, they have the least amount of rushing attempts of the NFL over that span. I don't understand where they're going. It just feels like for a team that lines up in 11 personnel, they've decided that they're going to make their offense pretty much predictable and one-dimensional, and defenses are starting to adjust by coming out in sub-packages, playing more nickel and dime, putting more defensive backs on the field to match up with the wide receivers that they have, and it's starting to shrink the windows that Sean McVay has been known to create in his passing game. So, yeah, I think Matt Stafford's struggles in part have been because of the offensive line, but I think it's also having something to do with the X's and O's and how Sean McVay is scheming this thing up. Because, again, I don't think there were any surprises for that Packers defense when they were going up against that Rams offense, and it showed, especially in the second half of that ballgame.
It did, and you mentioned the quarterback and Matthew Stafford. Everyone's going to look at this and wondering, all right, is what they spent on Matthew Stafford too much? It's going to be based on the expectations that we've laid, Chris. It's going to be a failure based on the fact that we expect him to be, based on that price tag, what was across the other sideline. We expect him to be like Aaron Rodgers and erase the mistakes of the guys around him when they pop up here. What you've gotten is a quarterback that is certainly better than the Jared Goff that you had around here and gives you a better chance when he's healthy. But we know Matthew Stafford playing through injuries always been a part of the package, and so you've got to accept the blame for what happens when that comes up.
Yeah, no question about it, but I also got to look at Matt Stafford a little bit sideways and say, your first job is to do no harm. Like, in order to win football games, you got to keep from losing them. That's what Bill Belichick says in that Man in Arena documentary. And so it feels like that's been the case with Matt Stafford. Multiple turnovers in three straight games that has led directly to points for the opposing team over the course of the last month in the National Football League. No team gives up more points to the opponents off of turnovers than the LA Rams. 44 points. The next closest team only given up 31 points. And the Rams have only played three games over the course of the last month because they had the bye week sprinkled in there. So that has to be a huge concern, and your quarterback has to stop giving the ball to the opposing team. Like, there are some things that the head coach can do to help him and to help that offensive line, namely having more of a commitment to the running game. But then also your quarterback has got to prevent some of the mistakes that we're seeing because, as you mentioned, Matt Stafford was brought here to be the difference in games like we saw on Sunday against the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field. Let's think back to that playoff game in the divisional round where the Rams were outclassed by those very same Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field. You had Jared Goff as your quarterback with a pin in one of his fingers, and ultimately it wasn't good enough for you. So you shipped two first-round draft picks to Detroit and Jared Goff for Matt Stafford. Stafford has got to find a way to be better in these spots. Otherwise, we're going to be talking about a disappointing season and an early exit for the LA Rams.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet's hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free pet coverage. Visit progressive.com. Coming up next, though, doubting Matthew Stafford. Just one of the many overreactions that we can give to you guys on a Monday here. We will get to plenty more of those from the NFL next after we tell you about Man in the Arena. Now, join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady's meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gautam's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Tom Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, and fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena, now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. It's an overreaction Monday on Canty and Golic Jr. So quite naturally, Gojo, we got to get to some overreactions, some of the people that are putting hot takes out there in the universe. We got to respond to those. So we're going to kick it over to our guy, Devin Kane, behind the glass, and he's going to get us going on the NFL Overreaction Monday topics. Let's go, Dev.
What's up, guys? All right, Chris, let's start with you. Bill Belichick is already a lock for NFL Coach of the Year. Is that an overreaction?
I don't think it's an overreaction, man. This might be the quickest rebuild in the history of the NFL. Just thinking about what the Patriots do and knowing that prior to last year, their last season where they didn't have double-digit wins was 2002. So the fact that you move on from Tom Brady a couple of years ago with no plan at the quarterback position, you try to roll out Cam Newton, that doesn't necessarily work out. Then you're getting Mac Jones, a rookie quarterback, and you're riding a six-game winning streak on the way to becoming one of the top seeds, if not the top seed in the AFC. Yeah, I think you got to give it up to Bill Belichick. We all know that he's one of the greatest coaches of all time, if not the greatest. But this season, he's actually demonstrating that by being able to retool this team, rebuild this team on the fly.
I'll say it's an overreaction only because, Chris, while I think he's absolutely going to be in the thick of it, I don't want to discount what Matt LaFleur has held together up there in Green Bay. I know Aaron Rodgers is always going to receive an outsized portion of the credit, but they've lost a fair amount of bodies in important spots. He's had to deal with that whole situation off the field. And also giving some credit to your former head coach in John Harbaugh, they have got the first place in the AFC Baltimore Ravens right now with an absolute triage unit suiting up in most position groups. So I think both deserve a lot of credit for that, even though Bill's probably going to win this thing. I mean, it's just the Patriots. They win everything. What do we got, Devin?
All right, Mike, let's stick with you. The Buccaneers are at their best when they don't need Tom Brady to win them the game. Is that an overreaction?
No, it's not an overreaction, just because I think that's probably the case for almost every team, right? Like, if you've got a team structured to go out there, and this is what I believe separated Tampa Bay when it came to the postseason last year. When you could hand it off to Leonard Fournette and let that group of angry redheads on the offensive line go out there and maul people, your life is a lot better. When Vita Vea is back in the lineup for your rush defense, your life gets a lot better. Like, these are all of the things that we were taught day one in football matter more than anything. We saw it play out for them in the last postseason, and when the cherry on top is the fact that your 44-year-old quarterback paying in a borderline MVP level, then yeah, that's the luxury that few teams have. Tampa's one of them.
Yeah, Gojo, you mentioned Vita Vea. He's going to have some dental work done on that grill after getting one of his teeth knocked out by that Colts offensive line. But I'm with you, though. I think playoff Lenny making an appearance in Week 12 is a good thing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Remember, it was around this time last year where this group morphed into a two tight end personnel offense that decided that they were going to be heavy on the run game and play action. I think that this is the time of year where they're going to start to morph their identity as well. First half of the season, we were talking about them dropping back nearly 75% of the time. I think that's going to flip a little bit because Tom Brady understands what it takes to win this time of year, especially against quality opponents. And so that run game is going to be highlighted more within their offense. So yeah, they're in more of a position of strength when Tom Brady's not asked to throw the ball 40-plus times. So I'm with you 1,000%. More Leonard Fournette is a better thing for this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team.
Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, NFL Overreaction Monday. Dev, let's keep it rolling.
All right, Chris, the Cowboys are locked to win the NFC East. Is that an overreaction?
Yeah, I don't think it's an overreaction. The Giants did the dirty work for the Dallas Cowboys yesterday in taking care of the Eagles, who was their closest competition. And I just feel like, based on where we're at in the calendar, knowing that the Cowboys have a 2.5 game lead against Philadelphia, I don't think they have anything to worry about. And when you look at the Cowboys' remaining schedule, it feels like there are a lot of wins that are left up there. So I'm not worried about the Dallas Cowboys. I think the biggest thing for them is getting healthy down the stretch, getting some key pieces back on that team, and they'll be poised to be able to make a run once they get into the tournament.
I would say this is in no way an overreaction here. None of the rest of the teams in the NFC East are equipped to challenge these guys. I understand the Cowboys have dealt with a COVID outbreak. I understand Mike McCarthy's not going to be on the sideline. I understand all those things here. I watched whatever that was between the Giants and the Eagles yesterday, and whatever the Washington football team thinks they might be with Taylor Heineke, I'm good. Dallas is going to be in there. Next question.
That was a win for the Giants is what you watched, Mike. coming up, last one. The Ravens are the best team in the AFC. Is that an overreaction?
Yes, I think it is. I think I can't trust them over the New England Patriots right now. I talked about the Patriots as one of the highest floor teams in the NFL based on Bill's formula. And in this current win streak, they have done nothing but add to what the ceiling can be here. As Mac Jones is given the most fertile soil on which to grow, that's got to be the best team in the AFC right now.
Yeah, come on over to my place, Mike. Come on over. I've been saying this for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Man.
I've been talking about the New England Patriots, man. I think this is the class of the AFC, man. So, yeah, I can't say that the Ravens are the best team in the conference, even though it's one of my former teams. As much as I love John Harbaugh and I love Lamar Jackson, it's the New England Patriots. And I'll keep saying it again, and I'll say it a little bit louder for the people in the back. That defense reminds me of the 2001 Patriots defense, and they were able to ride that to winning a Super Bowl. I'm not saying that the Patriots are going to win a Super Bowl, but they got a damn good shot at being able to do it. ESPN's FPI projects that they got an 18% chance at being able to make the Super Bowl. So, I mean, that's pretty good odds at this point in the year for this team. So the Patriots team, they're going to hang their hat on defense. They're going to hang their hat on being able to run the football and not ask Mac Jones to do too much. And if they stay with that formula, they're going to be a tough out for anybody in the NFL.
Speaking of quarterbacks doing too much, coming up next, why a gaffe by Kirk Cousins this weekend in a game gave birth to Dan Orlovsky's worst take yet. We'll get to that next here. Kenny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio. And Three and Out is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. And let's start with some sad news, Chris. Lee Elder, who broke down racial barriers as the first black golfer to play in the Masters, has died at the age of 87. Lee, who paved the way for the likes of Tiger Woods and so many others who would go on to become synonymous with this tournament, had his death announced Monday by the PGA Tour. No cause or details were immediately available. He had been in poor health and wore an oxygen mask when he appeared at the opening of the Masters back in April. The tour said he died early Sunday in California, surrounded by his family. And Chris, certainly a sad note there, but an incredibly impactful life. And one that I remember back in April, everyone was certainly happy to see celebrated in the way he was at the Masters.
No question about it. I'm glad he had that opportunity too. But just one of those things for my dad's generation. Just what Lee Elder meant to golf, being the first to break down that barrier and play in the Masters, and meant so much to them. And then just looking at the historical context, what it means in order to pave the way for the golfers of the modern era, like Tiger Woods and others, to be a space where it's more inclusive, where it's more diverse. I mean, you can't say enough about his contribution to the game of golf and to our society as a whole. So shout out to the legacy of Lee Elder and what he did for the game of golf and what he's done for sports in general.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. So again, certainly our condolences, thoughts, and prayers with everyone who knew and revered Lee Elder, again, passing away at the age of 87. As we head back to the world of sports here, Chris, we can lighten the mood a little bit here with what went on with Kirk Cousins in the NFL this weekend, because the Minnesota Vikings were down 8 points against the 49ers in the fourth quarter. They drove down inside the 10, went for it on fourth and goal. And while Kirk Cousins was trying to get everyone lined up, he lined up under the right guard for the snap here. When asked about this after the game, Kirk Cousins said, quote, "I just got under the wrong guy." And Chris, if that wasn't bad, that this is worse, because I heard that apparently Dan Orlovsky on NFL Live said, quote, "All those butts look the same to us." Wow, Dan. Wow. How dare you?
Yeah, that's one of Dan's worst takes, no question about it. I mean, you're the quarterback. You should know where you're lining up in terms of who's got the ball, who's going to snap you the ball. You should be able to know the difference with your offensive linemen. So, I mean, this is past the point where Kirk Cousins should absolutely know better. This is certainly an embarrassing moment. This is one of those Willie Beeman any given Sunday type of situations. The fact that they actually had to burn a timeout in order to get Kirk situated, I think that's probably the football point in all of this. But yeah, that's a bonehead blooper reel type of moment for Kirk Cousins, and what ends up being a disappointing loss for the Minnesota Vikings, because that was a team of late that was starting to build a little momentum and a little traction in terms of playoff seeding.
Yeah, after that timeout, Kirk Cousins threw the ball way over the head of his receiver. The Minnesota Vikings turned it over on downs and ended up losing the game here. So it is ugly all the way around. The things that haunt Kirk Cousins will continue to be the same. And Dan Orlovsky, I'm mad at you, and you'll have a lot to apologize for tomorrow. It's fine, too, because none of the quarterback's hands ever felt any different under center. Your guys were all the same to us, too, so can't hurt my feelings.
You take it so personal, though, Gojo. It's
Listen,
so personal
Chris,
for you.
You know that every day before practice, the quarterbacks and the centers go out for Q-center exchange. They go and practice that for full periods here. They swap around so that everyone can get used to everyone's cadence, where everyone likes the ball snap. They spend a lot of time with our butts. I'm sorry to insinuate that the center butts look that much similar to the guard and tackle butts is preposterous. You see them too often, Dan, and I'm calling BS on that nonsense.
But here's what I don't understand, though, Mike. Doesn't the center usually have a towel on his backside? Like, shouldn't that be the tell for Kirk Cousins to know which butt to get behind in order to get the snap? I'm just saying.
You would think, Chris, you would think. All I know is the centers line up in shotgun formations and don't snap the ball to the running back because both guys look the same all the time, but I digress.
Fair point.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. As we continue to go three and out, we've talked so much about the coaching carousel news in college football today. You know, the reports of LSU being interested in Brian Kelly, the blockbuster move of Lincoln Riley going out to coach USC and leaving Oklahoma. This one went over to the radar. Duke and head coach David Cutcliffe had mutually agreed to part ways, the school announced on Sunday. Cutcliffe had spent 14 seasons with the Blue Devils. He had 77 wins, 6 bowl appearances, and somehow managed to win the ACC Coastal in 2013 at Duke. He's best known for being the coordinator that helped the likes of Peyton Manning and Eli Manning onto their later greatness. But Chris, you're going to find a hard time to find anyone with a bad word to say about David Cutcliffe. He went to a place where winning was hard. He stayed and gave them legitimacy for a long time. And whoever comes next has big shoes to fill in that program.
Yeah, Mike, you failed to mention that he also developed a top 10 pick at quarterback in Daniel Jones, who went 6th overall in 2019. I mean, David Cutcliffe has got a pretty good resume at Duke, and this was a program that not too long ago was the team that you made sure to schedule for homecoming because that was an easy win. As a former player in the ACC, that was the stat game. And so Duke has become a far cry from that in recent memory. And so even though this season is not going the way that they wanted to with 8 straight losses, like overall, there's certainly a respectability factor that comes along with Duke now. And that has to be attributed to what David Cutcliffe has done for that program.
Yeah, whoever gets to step in there next is standing on the shoulders of a hell of a football coach here. It hasn't looked great as of late, but David Cutcliffe leaves behind a hell of a legacy for that Duke Blue Devils program. So certainly a lot to keep track of there. More moving and shaking in college football and the rankings coming out tomorrow. We will keep you up to date on all of it. Stick around next here, though. Spain and Fitz will keep you updated on it next here on ESPN Radio.